Welcome to episode
40
of the Perth Podcast, the big 4-0.
Yep.
You haven't even hit the big 40 yet, have you?
Nope.
Not yet. Tube. Youngsters, you utes, bleeding utes, that's what you are.
Yeah, so it.
Episode 40 though, that's been a journey.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. Like I was saying earlier, I can't believe this started in November 21 and we've only managed, November 19, sorry.
I was going to say, it's not 21.
only managed 40
episodes. That's my other age if people ask.
Aye, that's right. Put the two of them together.
Aye, episode 40. What are we doing today then?
We are speaking to someone very, very hardworking, very special from Blairgowrie.
Whoa, Blairgowrie.
Yeah.
That's just up the road. And part of Perthshire.
Why do you think they're here?
Ah, good shout. Pit music. Studio today we have
Kyle. Welcome.
Hello,
how you doing?
Good to be here. Yeah, fine.
It's warm in here, isn't it?
Yeah,
warm in here. I don't open the windows, but traffic goes by and it ruins our podcast. You're just gonna sit there and sweat, I'm afraid.
You're taking the risk with Lucy being in here
today.
Oh,
I know,
well,
my dog's here too, but she's lying down looking like she wants to go for a walk. Yeah, you, I'm talking about you. Yeah. Do you want in on this? Do you want to say anything? You're getting a look, folks.
Oh, honestly, if she'd barked at that point, I'd be amazing, just bowed down to your greatness.
I haven't taught her how to speak because it annoys me. So. But you might hear her panting in the background because she wants to go out for another walk, which I'm not going to say out loud because that'll trigger her. So. Yeah. But she's just going to sit and pant.
It could be her, it could be me.
Do you want to go out later? Do you want to go out, Stoby? Yeah. Take down your tea, you can paddle.
Where's the ball? Give me the ball.
Oh, don't say that to her.
You said you were going to throw it.
I know.
And you didn't throw it.
Oh, she does the whole thing of, I want you to throw the ball, but you can't have the ball. But you have to throw the ball. But I'm not going to give you the ball. You can't have it. Don't look at me. I know that's the case.
Anyway, Lucy's not our guest.
Is she not?
No.
Oh, yeah, Kyle. Sorry. Kyle, go back to Kyle. So Kyle has a YouTube channel, and I believe you do a lot more than that. So tell us a wee bit, first of all, about this YouTube channel. What is it about and what do you do?
Well, it's really a travel channel. So that's the way I intended it to be back in 2016. So
He's been going longer than us. What's that all about? Right, get out.
We're the juniors.
So actually, I used to be a store manager. So I actually met you in Asda.
Oh, back in the days.
Yeah. So after that, I'd actually decided I wanted to move up. That's like, I just wanted to be supermarket man. I wanted to be like in there. That was going to be my life. So I ended up getting on like a management program and working my way into that. Nobody in Perth Asda was moving on. So there was no like, everyone was like set.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, no, I kind of fancy something. So there was, luckily for me at the time, there was something that opened up in Aberdeen in Dice. So I managed to get my first department manager job there.
Up in Aberdeen. Wow, right, okay.
I've got family up there. So luckily I was able to, you know, stay with them.
Scrounge your couch.
Yeah, pretty much. and I worked there for about 2 years, and then I actually got headhunted by Audi.
I thought you was going to say, then I realized it was rubbish, so I moved on. <That'll
come. laughs>
And then obviously I said yes to Audi. I became an assistant store manager there, so it was like a wee bit higher up. And then I was only there for a year, and then the co-op came and they offered me a store manager position.
They sell less chainsaws though, Aldi's, you know, pint of milk, chainsaw, loaf of bread.
So I did that, went down to Manchester for a wee while, did some training, and then started up in Aberdeen doing the cooperative. And I was only there for 1 year, and I decided, no.
This isn't
what I thought it was. You know, when you start your career and you say, right, I'm going to get here and it's going to be great. I can settle down. I'll be, you know, on a good wage, that sort of thing. But when I got there, it wasn't all it was made out to be. And I just thought, wait, what am I going to do now? At the time, I was in a relationship. I was engaged.
Right.
And I just thought to myself, if I'm not wanting to do this job, you know, this is a career I'm set now. I've moved in with a partner that I'm engaged with. If it's not something that I'm wanting to do, what do I do? And you kind of, it's kind of like a, you're stuck. You're kind of, well, I've got to have this job because I need to pay bills. I need to, you know, I've got all these commitments that I need to keep. So,
but I hate it.
Yeah. And it was just getting to the point where literally when you wake up in the morning, I just didn't want to go, you know, and it started to just affect me like that. And
it grinds you down, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I thought to myself, right, I'm going to have to speak up about this. So I spoke with my partner at the time and we agreed that, okay, this isn't, you know, going to work out. So we parted ways after about 8 months or so.
Was that person only after a store manager? Is that what this was?
Well, yeah.
I only love you for your store manager's status.
So if you're not going to be banging in that nice wage, you can just forget it.
Cards are dealt.
We actually parted. It was on good terms. Right. And, you know, I was actually lucky that she was very understanding. And, you know, it's very hard to come by that sort of thing in relationships, I think, these days. But luckily for me, it was okay. So from that point, you know, it was a brand new leaf and I just thought to myself, right, where do we go from here? Like you've literally exited everything. You've left your job, you've left your relationship, you know, you've literally just got your belongings.
Sounds like a midlife crisis, doesn't it?
It does.
You buy a motorbike,
A quarter life crisis. So back at my auntie's, I was in Aberdeen and I thought to myself very quickly, it came on very quickly. I actually found somebody on YouTube that I became inspired by at the time. And it was a YouTube account called The Life of Jord. I don't know if you've heard any of that.
No, that one.
This guy, he left his job in England and started traveling. And he's actually still traveling to this day. He's still doing it.
Wow.
I still keep seeing his stories on Instagram and things like that. So he's still out there.
Right.
The Life of Jord is. I thought to myself, I wonder if I could do that, you know? So I did. I just decided after watching a few of his videos.
I wonder if I can do that. Aye.
Yeah. I just watched a few of his videos and thought to myself, why not?
Well, there's got to be a format there, right? There's got to be a path that he's leading people down. So, yeah.
So I thought to myself, what do I do? What's the first thing that I do to start on this path? And it was literally I sold all my stuff. I even had a folder of Pokemon cards that I'd had since I was like 6. And it had all the shinies. I had everything in it. And I was like looking at it and I'm thinking, do I not? I wonder how much I'll get for it. I ended up getting about £200 for the whole folder. But if I'd kept it, I bet you any money it would have been worth a lot more.
I was
going to
add a zero on these days.
Yeah. I'm sure Pokemon cards and a folder of Pokemon cards ended up on Antiques Roadshow.
Really?
Really?
I get my news and information through memes, right? And it was like, it was a meme saying, I didn't feel old until I saw Pokemon cards on the Antiques Roadshow. And there's a picture. Uh-huh. Now, it could be fake. Could be, but
probably not.
There's a chance it's not, you know?
Brilliant. Yeah. So that's
not to depress.
That'll be his folder.
I know.
You just never know.
Got it for 200 quid.
Some mug sold it to me for 200 quid.
Somebody's quarter life crisis.
Somebody's probably in the Bahamas right now saying, thanks, lad. Thanks, lad.
Cheers, Kyle.
Yeah, in their own travel videos.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that went, you sold them, your pride and joy collection gone. Yeah. And what did you do with all that then? What was that money for?
Well, at the time, after selling that folder of cards, I actually had a car that I had to sell as well. I was on finance, so I had to get that sold. And then literally, that was it. The car, some of my belongings that I'd brought up from Perth, you know, just things that I'm not really needing anymore. I just got rid of everything. And I was left with maybe 3 jumpers, 3 pairs of trousers, a few underwear, that sort of thing.
That was it. 1 pair of boxer shorts, you know, inside out, turn them back to front. Yeah. You know?
And I don't think at that point I'd actually booked to go anywhere. No. And I think it wasn't that long I decided, you know what, I'm just going to go to Australia. I just picked Australia. I was wanting to go to Asia first, but I was just a bit worried. Language, culture. Not that I have anything against anything. It's just when you go to some place, I've never been out of Europe or I've never been out of the Western world. So going to some place that has got a completely new culture,
You can be shocked. Yeah. It can be a total shock. Yeah.
I don't think I was brave enough at that point to do something like that. So I thought, why not just.
No, because I only quit my job. Yeah. Well, very much. Gave up everything I knew.
Literally some of the bravest stuff you can do. I wasn't that brave. You know?
I just thought to myself, why not? Let's just go for it. So Australia was. Nice. I think the first hostel I ended up in was Gilligan's Hostel in Cairns. I actually didn't expect that hostel to be like a nightclub as well. So that was quite interesting.
Did you turn the music down? No.
So yeah, but no, it was really good. As soon as you got off that plane and you were at the other side of the world, just your backpack, nothing else. I think I bought a camera and I bought a laptop with me.
Right.
I did actually start the YouTube channel before going to Australia, so that's how it started.
Right. You were in the middle of outback trying to get a Wi-Fi signal to sell. Yeah.
I think I actually was like packing videos, like telling people, you know, where I wanted to go. I also gave a bit of background as well about why I was quitting, you know, retail. Well,
it's
all that
massively
sort of stuff.
Important to people. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's probably the most important part of it, I would argue. It's not the being where you are, it's the why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah. All superheroes and supervillains need their origins.
Well, exactly, yeah. We haven't found out which one Kyle is.
Not yet.
It'll come out, though. So Australia, though, I mean, it's a hell of a distance, first of all, of course. Yeah. Was it 24 hours to get there?
And, yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, it was literally
and
about that.
There's like giant killer spiders there, mate. I mean, it's not for me.
Well, you won't believe me. You two won't believe me, but I never saw a spider.
Really?
I was there for a year and never saw a spider, never saw a crocodile, never saw a snake.
Were you in Australia? Did you get off somewhere else?
I actually did. I did see a kangaroo, I did see a koala.
Was he at Camperdown Park in Dundee? Yeah. I got on the wrong bus.
What else did we see? Jellyfish.
Wild koalas, like out in the wild. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, we went to a place, this was in the bush, it was called Pigeon Hill, and it wasn't actually a hill, it was actually a proper mountain.
Right.
Why they call it Pigeon Hill, I have no idea.
They're modest. <that's>
But the views from the top of there were unbelievable.
Oh,
we camped there as well, so... at the bottom of this mountain, you've got the beach, you've got the ocean.
Nice.
So it was like dream, like a proper dream, you know.
As a photographer, I have to ask, because one reason I've wanted to go down there is for the Milky Way, to photograph the Milky Way. Because up in Scotland, we get the crap end of the Milky Way. It's
really
tiny. There's not a lot of detail there. It's not very deep. It's not very colourful. But down in Australia and Africa and things like that, they get the proper end of the Milky Way. And I'm gagging to go down there and shoot that.
Wow, that would actually be quite cool.
Yeah, so a mate of mine went to Australia, spent all night lying his back in the outback, looking up. And so it was incredible. It was probably just all Starlink satellites going by you now, right? Back in his day, there wasn't many up there. And he saw by eye, he saw the Milky Way, the proper end of it. And with a camera, you can get stunning results. And I've tried it here, but it comes up the horizon by about 3 inches and that's it. You don't really see it at all. So did you do any night stuff at all?
There were a few times the hostels that I stayed in were quite close to the beach. So, you know, when you go to a hostel, everybody think like there's a stigma around hostels, right? You know, we all think that they're not very nice places to be and things like that, but honestly, I've stayed in hostels in Edinburgh. They are beautiful. The people you meet there, unbelievable. Same in Australia. Don't get me wrong, there were some hostels that, you know, you wouldn't go back to.
But the one with the snake in the toilet.
for the majority, for the most part, they were all really, really good. So you meet people, great. You end up, I've still got people on my Facebook page that I'm still friends with.
That you bumped into.
And we still keep in touch. There was a few girls from Germany. They were like German teachers at primary school. We still keep in touch with them. When you meet people, they want to do things. So you go out into whatever they're doing. And for a few times, we actually went to the beach and we had like a campfire at the beach.
Nice.
We slept on the beach.
Brilliant.
Unbelievable. And the sunrise in the morning from the beaches were just out of this world. Yeah.
It's a totally stars. Different world, isn't it? It really is. Yeah. Because you know, over here, you'd be freezing.
Well, yeah, for a start. Yeah. Do you know, surprise, just when you mentioned freezing, Australia isn't all hot.
No, I know. I know. My brother lives over there and it's a bit, yeah.
So has he been out there for a long time?
Oh, yeah. Like 30 odd. Really? Years, maybe more. Yeah, yeah. Long time. That's another story. But yeah, he's been out there and my mum went over as well. It was too hot for her, but you know, we're kind of Scottish through and through. So, you know, anything over 21 is like, oh, a bit like toasty. yeah, exactly. Like today. But yeah, it's a fab experience and a great first point of call. So from your video point of view, from your YouTube, is that where it started? Were you making videos there and uploading them, or were you recording them to bring them back later to
no,
do?
No, so the main idea was prior to leaving, get a camera, get a laptop. I had no experience with cameras, no experience.
Turn it on.
up to that point, I hadn't ever owned my own laptop.
Oh wow! Right.
So you know, this was all kind of new.
Right.
So literally, I just wanted to go out there and film, upload whenever I could so that I could keep my family informed with where I was, how I was doing.
Nice.
And so they could just, you know, watch as I traveled Australia, New Zealand, and so Canada.
Quite raw then, really. Were the first videos quite raw? Like quite real and quite, I don't know what I'm doing, but here we are and away we go. But that's real. I like that. I like the idea of the reality.
I look back at the first videos sometimes.
Do you cringe?
And I know I shouldn't, because I was literally doing the best I could at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm looking back with a little bit more of experience.
But that's good, because that means you're progressing and you want to do better with it, you know, and that's a good sign that you're still interested in doing it as well. So.
Yeah.
So Australia, first place. What happened after that then? A year in Australia.
Yep. So a year in Australia, it went by so quick. And basically just went East Coast from Cairns right down to Adelaide on the bus. Like buses take you from each city.
Yeah.
The longest bus ride I did was from, I think it was from Townsville to the Gold Coast.
Right.
And that took about 17 hours.
On a bus?
On the bus.
Eek. That's where the aircon breaks down, right?
Yeah, I might be wrong, but I think off the top of my head, it was Townsville to Gold Coast. I think it was that.
17 hours.
That's
not for me.
Sydney, I got to Sydney after about 3 months and I realized I'd done a little bit too much spending on the way and I ran out of money. I was literally homeless. I slept on the park bench for a few nights and I was literally... I was so lucky. I was walking through Sydney City Centre and this guy with the same colour t-shirt as what you've got on, an orange t-shirt, right? It had care on it.
Right.
This guy was a fundraiser and he was a street fundraiser standing on the street. These are the people that, you know, when you walk past, I think some of them are in Perth as
well. Yeah.
You know, they tried to get you to sign up for the charity and things like that.
I'm normally eating a sandwich or on my phone at that point, but carry on.
And he literally stopped me and he just started chatting. And he said to me, Kyle, I actually really enjoyed speaking to you today. And I think you'd be quite good at this job.
Right.
Would you like to have an interview? We could get you in sometime next week. And I said, yeah, sure. I'm actually really needing a job right now.
Skint, big man.
I did tell him, look, I am struggling a wee bit because I've spent my money and he says, it's okay. We can get you an interview and you can come and crash at my place if you want until you get paid.
That's good.
Because he says, I've no doubt you'll get the job. So I crashed with him. He was actually a traveler as well. He was from England. I actually can't remember his name.
We'll call him Bob. Bob was good to you.
But he was traveling as well. He was with his partner. We stayed in a Sydney suburb. We commuted in and out to work together for a good, I think they paid me weekly, but they paid you weekly in arrears over there. So it was 2 weeks before I got paid.
Right.
After that, I then moved out and was back in the hostels again, and I was getting that regular paycheck.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? 8 to 5 fundraising in Sydney and anywhere in Australia. I think it was a company called The Fundraising People that I worked for. And they've got offices in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, New Zealand.
Right, so
that's how I was able to easily
to
pick up work.
Money,
to
keep also money, move around at the same time.
They've got offices
genius.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Through one haphazard meeting with a guy in the street. And that's incredible. But that's what traveling's about, right? It's the whole idea that you don't know what the plan is. The plan is somewhere in front of you and it will find you, you know? Yeah.
And you got unique experience as well, where you got to, for a couple of weeks, live like you lived there, you know. You were staying in the suburb, like you're saying, you were commuting. Most people backpacking would not have that sort of experience,
but I know a few people have done similar things in Australia, and they are very open and kind people when you meet the right ones, you know, and they're very accommodating. And you know, a friend of mine, he went and he took a year out to go to uni, and it was the same sort of story. Like, everyone you met, you know, if you need a bit of money, they'd offer you some work. If you need a place to crash, they'd give you that. And, you know, without really asking, they just offer. It's not like he was going up to people going, can I crash on your couch tonight? It wasn't like that at all. He was just like, you know, they were like, where are you going? I'm just sort of floating about. Oh, do you want to stay at mine? It was straight up and straight in front. And I think there's something to be said for that sort of culture, that they're not afraid of everything, not afraid of people. And, you know, not everyone that is walking about with a backpack on is a murderer or a paedophile or whatever. We are somehow being taught to believe that everyone's a nasty piece of work in this country. And it's not like that, you know, and it shouldn't be like that.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because I couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, it's when you go out there and you go into these places, the people are so kind. And you just see a whole new world that's not on the news, because the news, obviously, we know that the news is mostly negative stories.
Clickbait.
But, you know, when you go into other countries, whether it be Asia, whether it be Australia, whether it be Europe, you know, people are so nice. And they're willing to do so much for you. If you're needing a place to stay, they're willing to open their door for you. And
which
it's still
is amazing, isn't it? Because there's not many, I don't think there's many people in this country that would be willing to do that for a complete stranger they met an hour ago in the street. You know, I really, really don't think that that's a thing over here. I mean, how many hitchhikers do you see in the streets these days?
I seen a hitchhiker today.
Did you?
Genuinely saw a hitchhiker.
I haven't seen one for, honestly, I mean, COVID might be a part of that, of course, as well, but I have not seen hitchhikers for a long time.
Genuinely saw one going to Stirling. I was going to Aviva. So I couldn't help
okay, a lift. I'm going half a mile up the road, lads. Do you want a lift?
That was it. It was on the A9 between Inverness and Rosden.
What can you do? But I think it's horrible. We've reached that stage where everyone's so afraid of everything that we're not willing to take people in, and we're not willing to help people that are out in the street or whatever. And it's great to hear that. Still, you know, you're getting that experience over there. And, you know, I'd love to have done something like that. Not when I was young, you know, when people normally travel.
When you've got the energy, you don't have the drive. Yeah. When you've got the drive, you don't have the energy.
Yeah, and now I've got dependents and, you know, I need to earn money and all that sort of stuff for my family. And you're like, you know, but part of there's an urge to do something like that. But my age with a family, it's a bit ridiculous. I'm probably going to have to wait until the kids are old
enough
to
move. And you're failing eyesight and hearing.
All right. Jeez, you know, I've left my walking stick over there, all right.
I think as well, though, I think for myself, I think there was a number of things that lined up that just made me want to just do it. And, you know, there's been a few things that have happened. You know, when I was 14, I actually lost my mother. She was she passed away in a house fire when I was 14. And my father, he's never been present. And that actually, there's a wee bit of a story about that, actually, because I actually meet him again in Canada when I get over to Canada. So, so that's, I'll speak about that in a minute. But so there's been a few things that have happened, you know.
To drive this. But I mean, everyone has to find themselves, right, Kyle? You know, everyone's got a different way of finding themselves as well. And, you know, like I think teenagers are under a lot of pressure these days to be told or ask who they are and all that sort of stuff. I don't think I found myself till I was maybe 30 odd.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the thing with me. Like when I was 16, you know, when you're at school and you're dictating what you're going to do, I was like, well, I'm good with computers. And the natural progression is to go to uni. So I'll do computing at uni. Done nothing with it. I mean, my most recent job, it's definitely helped, but other than that, I've not done anything. And I now know how my brain works, that I would probably go back and say to myself, yeah, learn computing, but learn it as part of like mechanics or electronics or something where it's a bit more logical, it's a bit more problem solving. I just didn't gel with coding at all, but I just, it was that I'd made the decision and I have to see it through, you know?
But you change and people evolve and you know, that whole idea of knowing who you are at that age and finding the world and finding there's other people out there, you know, and it's not just about the people you know at the moment, and it's not just your friends at school or uni or college or whatever it might be. And, you know, I don't think there's much of a better way of finding that out than sodding off to the other side of the world.
Do you know what? You're so right. Because when I was growing up, my mother, she had some difficulties health-wise. So I was looking after my mum quite a lot from the age of six, right the way up to when she passed. So I was not able to do the things that normal kids do, which is go out and meet friends, make friends at school and those kind of things. So, you know, I missed out on a lot of that. And so, as I said earlier, this drive to really want to just kickstart something in my life. And when I got over there and you're meeting all these people, and I think it just turbocharges things, and you start to get amongst a diverse group of people from every walk of life, all backgrounds.
Eye-opening, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
And I think it's one of the things in my life that I'll be forever grateful for.
Yeah.
Because I'm not quite sure what would have happened if I didn't have an opportunity like that to do something.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, mental health is a big thing these days, and it's such a serious thing because it really does impact people.
But I think the work thing, like what you did earlier on, what you were talking about earlier on, but leaving the work you weren't happy with, is the one thing that most people are afraid to do, because they don't know what the alternative is. Mm-hmm. They don't know. They don't know if there's work out there for them. They don't know. I mean, I know people that will quite happily jump about. I literally know a guy, my mate Mike, he's about 7'8" or something. He's massive. He went, he travels. He owns a backpack, a laptop, and what you were talking about, a few pairs of clothes.
Yeah.
And he works in hostels. He does the IT for them. He does beds, and he'll earn enough to be able to go and travel. So at the moment he's in Vietnam or something like that.
Wow.
He's been in Tokyo. He's been in all these other places, but right now he's in Vietnam, and he has literally got his backpack. He walks about with no dependents, no nothing. Yep. And he's exactly the same age as me, bar 2 days. And he just goes about it. I'm sitting there going, and you know, he'll say things like, oh, but you've got a family and all that. And he's jealous, maybe partly jealous of what I've got. And I'm sitting there going, you've got no dependents. You can do whatever the hell you want, whatever you want to do. And you're in Vietnam, and I'm at home, you know, and I love being at home and all that stuff. But equally, you're living a life that I won't see, and I'm probably living a life that you won't see. And that's why we talk, isn't it? That's why we discuss these things and learn about people who've been to Australia who just ditched their job, you know. but it's an incredibly brave thing to do. And I think the one thing I always remember someone said to me once was, you're not a tree, you can move. You know,
that's
and
right,
I think
yes.
that's such a valuable thing to. Yeah. I mean, I've said it before, probably on here, that people have a moan about where they live, and people moan about Perth. It happens, but you're not a tree. If you're not happy here, go somewhere else. I'm not telling anyone to get out or to come here or whatever.
But Perth podcast,
beat it.
Get out.
but it's the concept of, you're not happy with what you are, who you are, where you are. Only you can change that. Those opportunities do not come up to your door because you're sitting moping about it.
Yeah.
You have to go out and find these opportunities and grab them.
Yeah.
And that's what you did. Whether you knew you were doing it at the time or not, it is what you did.
That's right. Yeah, definitely didn't know what I was doing at the time, that's for sure.
100% I had no clue what I was doing. I was young, I was stupid, but hey, it worked out.
Do you know what? I think it's what we need to do when we're young, you know. We've got to just take those risks if you want to. Like, not everybody wants to do these things, but that's
don't
okay
listen
too.
To him, go and do it, folks. Just go and do it.
But yeah, definitely, like if you're one of those people that is at least just thinking about it, you know, you know, definitely do think about it.
And actually, that it's that, like we're talking about now, hopefully this will inspire somebody out there to go, you know what? I do hate my job. I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go and do that. I'm going to create a rival YouTube. No, don't do that. Don't create a rival YouTube video. But it's the idea of people like yourself inspire people, whether you know you do it or not, but you do. And it's the idea that you can do that, and anyone can do it. All you have to do is do it.
Yeah.
A bit of planning.
Just like Nike. Do it.
Yeah. Just
do it.
Shh. They never, you never said that, right? No copyright. We can't afford any losses. We have no money. Come at us. but it is, it's that whole concept of you're not a tree. You can move. You can do it. And you have done it. So Australia, sunny, not so sunny, no snakes. Apparently, I don't believe that. Koala bears and stuff. Where did you go after Australia?
They're not bears.
It's false advertising, isn't it?
From Australia, after the year visa was up, went to New Zealand. So New Zealand had the visa for the year. And I was in, went to Christchurch first, spent maybe a matter of days there just to try and figure out what I wanted to do. And then I remembered, wait a minute, the fundraising people, they've got an office in Auckland. So I thought, contact them. So contacted them, got a job doing the fundraising, just like I was doing in Australia again. This time I was fundraising for, I think it was the Heart Foundation. I think
I was hoping you was going to say Perth Podcast, but we've not seen any of that money yet.
I think it was that off the top of my head, I think. But anyway, yeah, started working in Auckland, New Zealand, and I was doing that for about a month. And then I met somebody in the hostel that was wanting to do farm work. And I thought to myself, wow, I've never done that before. That might be interesting. So they got an interview. So I went with them. In the car, and we arrived at this farm about 3 or 4 hours south of Auckland in the middle of nowhere. And to actually the nearest town or any sort of settlement close to this farm was about 2 hours away. Ooh. In all directions. So wow. You were literally slap bang in the middle of the North Island.
Wow.
In, I think it was called Waikiki. I think it was called Waikiki in New Zealand that we were at, I think.
Right.
And the farm, we were literally looking after sheep, bulls, polo horses.
Wow.
We went to competitions. I learned so much about looking after cattle and looking after sheep. Also working with sheepdogs. Got to learn how to drive tractors and quad bikes and you name it. The worst part of it was weeding.
Oh.
And the worst weed, believe it or not, on the farm was the thistle.
No way.
Yeah, they grew like...
We can't have thistles, that's our thing. What's going on here?
They grew like wildfires there.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
They were just right. Everywhere.
And they're strong. They don't want to come out of the ground, you know. Yeah. They are very deep-rooted. Oh,
so
wow.
Literally, Scottish flower.
Literally
it's
all
not just
day,
a weed. It's yeah. A Scotch weed.
All day, every day, out with the weed killer. And the paddock's massive.
Right.
So you can imagine...
I take it they don't like eating them or anything.
No. That's the one thing that they won't eat, the cattle.
Was that an invasive species
yeah,
for them?
Yeah.
Right. Wasn't me. Was it you? Did you take a thistle over? Was that you?
I was like, please, that's my native. Do not harm it.
What you didn't tell the farmer is to spray them with water. He was watering them. Flourish, my pretty.
If you won't, the farmer says, if you don't do that, you're 2 hours walk to the next settlement. Okay, whatever.
to pick up the water. You must have been quite self-sufficient. Then were they making their own bread and stuff on the farm, or is that not a thing?
To be honest, I don't know. Mm. I know, well, they gave us a car, so whenever we needed shopping or anything like that, we could
but
use
two
the car.
Hours mate
yeah
two
it was
hours
literally if you wanted shopping, you wanted to get milk or anything like that, you had to go to
as the delivery
hours.
No.
Do you know what Woolworths here is not a thing anymore.
Yeah,
but I was actually amazed that, you know, we shopped in Woolworths when in New Zealand.
Oh, right.
Yeah, when we went to the shop, it was Woolworths,
there.
But it's not obviously the same thing. But it's called.
Do they
Woolworths,
call it Woolies?
But they call it Woolies. Yeah. Yeah. Woolworths.
Glad we can say no. That stays no matter where you go.
Yeah. So that was basically New Zealand in a nutshell. That was like farm work for 7 months. And then I think I got like 3 months of travel after that. We went to, do you know, White Island? White Island.
Yeah.
That volcano erupted a couple of years after we were on that.
What did you do?
Turns out it was an invasion of thistles.
This deep-rooted thistle got did it. That's, so it just happened not long after you
yeah
departed.
Just literally a couple of years that volcano erupted. Wow. Unfortunately, obviously there was some fatalities, but
yeah.
Unfortunately, but yeah, it was bubbling away when I was there, that's for sure.
That's why you got out.
I was like, I've seen everything now, let's get off the island. Yeah. Thank you.
Is that the time?
It's getting awfully hot here.
Oh yeah, it's very pretty.
That's not global warming, people. So after New Zealand?
After New Zealand, it was straight over to Canada. But just before actually arriving in Canada, I applied because of my father. He's a Canadian citizen. And I'd only met my father once or twice before this. And this was when I was much younger. So I did have knowledge that he was out there. So I did manage to contact him before leaving, maybe about a month or two before leaving New Zealand. And through contacting him, I was able to get some details and actually get my proof of Canadian citizenship certificate. So if I want to go back to Canada, I can't, unless I've got the passport.
Right,
I've got the certificate to say that I'm a citizen, but it's not like a travel document. So I've got to actually use the passport first. But luckily, I was able to get an emergency entry into, because it was like I was literally just about to go there. So managed to get the emergency sort of pass into the country, if you like. But yes, my father, now I've only met him twice or so. And this was our chance to try and see if we could sort of make some sort of relationship.
Right.
We got there and it was fine for like a month. But I didn't realize before me arriving that him and his partner had arranged to be moving in together. And there was a lot of things going on behind the scene. And I think I'd kind of interrupted that process, but I didn't know. They never told me. Mm. So within about a month or two, my father said to me that he didn't want to pursue a relationship any further with me. So,
no, cheers, big man. Eh?
Yeah.
Jeez.
It was actually quite a shock. I thought we were getting onto something, but no. One night he came home from work and said, no, I don't want to do this. So by the next morning, 7 o'clock, I was out on the street and not knowing what I was going to do. And actually, when I was there in Canada, I got back into retail to save up some money because
I wanted to
save some more money to continue traveling, because I wasn't planning on actually coming home at this point.
Right.
So I'd actually managed to get a job in Walmart as a deputy store manager in Victoria. And I was doing that for maybe about literally just a month or two. And then I had to say, look, I am so sorry.
This still isn't for me.
Yeah. And you know, there was just nothing that they could do at the time. You know, there was nothing anybody to do to give me an accommodation and things. So I just thought to myself, right, okay, let's just see what we're going to do. So I literally decided from the moment I was leaving my father's house, and I was just walking down into the Victoria City Centre, because that's where they've got all the transport links and things. Mm. On that walk, I decided right there and then, I'm going to come home.
Right, wow. So it's just
I just thought to myself, I don't have enough money to continue traveling. So I'm just going to have to come home.
Right.
So I literally came home and arrived in Scotland again in July 2018.
Remembered how bloody cold it is and went, what have I done?
That cold wind off the airplane is a real thing. Yeah. And literally the first people to offer me to you know, have some sort of roof over my head were my grandparents.
Oh, okay.
And literally they offered me that, and I arrived in July 2018, and literally within 5 or 6 months both of them had their own health issues, and I started to become their carer. And it was something that I didn't notice until maybe 2 years ago, that I was, wait a minute, this is actually
I'm not just a bidey in anymore.
Yeah, this is something quite, you know, they're needing me.
Yeah.
And it was literally from that point that I've just become their carer, full-time carer. And I was doing for the last 3 years, 5 years actually, because 2019, January 2019, until about until March this year, I was looking after them while working in Asda's as a colleague.
Right.
And it wasn't until my grandmother had an accident this year that she needs more support for her mobility. So I've stopped working now, and I'm now full time with them.
Right.
And all my YouTube content, all the stuff in Blairgowrie, which I'm sure we'll get onto, that was all done while being a carer.
Wow. Right.
Yeah.
That's,
That's why I said hardworking.
Well, yeah. But what I absolutely admire is your ability to just adapt to whatever the situation is. And you're not afraid. You're clearly not afraid to pick up whatever it is, farm work.
But I am.
Yeah. What?
I am. I'm quite nervous, you know, so like I'll always think, oh, can I do it? I put myself down a bit sometimes, you know.
Everyone thinks like that, you know. I think anyone who's in a job they enjoy, for example, is always waiting for that tap in the shoulder, that imposter syndrome to turn around and go,
yeah,
what are you doing here? And you go, oh yeah, you're right, I need to be back in Asda or something. And it's not, you know, everyone goes through that. I go through that. Every one of my mates that I know has high-end jobs or whatever. Everyone has.
Yeah.
I think you either got imposter syndrome or you're incredibly arrogant or you're a liar.
You know? Can you be all three?
Yeah, possibly. but, you know, everyone's waiting for that tap on the shoulder to say, you shouldn't be here, you shouldn't be doing this. You know, am I capable? I think everyone asks themselves that question.
Yeah.
It's the ability to drive through that question and come out the other side of it and go, of course I am, because all you have to do is try. And no one is born a coder or a carer or a farm worker. You have to learn and you have to adapt and you have to be able to use a bit of common sense, that old adage of it's not so common anymore. But it's just common sense. Yeah. You know, how do you muck out a horse? Well, you grab a shovel and you start working, or you watch the guy in front of you doing it. That's how you do things. And it's the ability to get past that fear factor that people have. And of course, looking after someone like your grandparents, a very personal thing to do, of course. Mm-hmm. It's not like you could let somebody else do it, but you're doing it.
Yeah.
And you know them and you care for them. Yeah. You know they'll get care that way.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible thing to be able to walk away from your travel. Obviously, you're not going to be able to travel, are you? That's out of the question right now.
Yeah, that's literally just happened. So obviously, I've created three episodes. I'm doing a travel series at the moment. So it's a travel documentary series in Scotland to help people discover the parts of Scotland that aren't, you know,
Edinburgh, Glasgow, the mainstream ones.
It's just like, you know, the hidden history of Scotland, if you like, and trying to find unique people who have unique stories and
plenty of them about in Scotland.
So that's basically how that started. And I started obviously with what I could, and that was Blairgowrie. So I actively, I can't remember what year it was. I think it was like 2020 that I started the first episode.
Oh, we don't talk about 2020 here. Bad times.
Or maybe it was just before, I can't remember. But yeah, started episode one in Blairgowrie, and I think it was to do with berries.
The berry tune. Massive history there,
And that's something that everybody in Blairgowrie takes to heart, because, you know, Blairgowrie is an older population, so they've grown up with that history.
I'm off to the berries. Aye. Off to the berries. That's how I paid for whatever.
Even like with my family, like, you know, when they were younger, you know, they would go and spend some time in the berries as well. So it's one of those parts of the town's history that provides the opportunity for people to come together and connect.
I mean, very quick fun fact, I bought my first ever car stereo from money I earned at the berries.
Really?
Yeah. Not that I'm old.
Was it a tape deck?
No way it was. It must have been
because you weren't putting vinyls into it.
How do you know? It could be really popular. No, genuinely, I saved up. I went to the berries for the 2 weeks of the berry holidays, and I saved up enough to get it was second hand, by the way. You don't earn that much of the berries. You've got to be awfully good at the berries to get good money.
I hate to say this, but I can remember cars with tapes in them.
So you're getting old as well.
Yeah, I can remember cars with tapes in them.
You'll know what the pencil's for then, why you always carried a pencil in case it caught up in it.
I'm not that old.
But the berries are an incredible part of Blairgowrie. And of course, there's the mills as well, the old mill. Because I do that walk occasionally with a dog and stuff. And that's a nice place to walk down.
Yeah.
And then you can move on to the exotics of Rattray when you're finished.
Do you know what? Actually, very recently, I've discovered something about Blairgowrie and Rattray. Rattray was the very first settlement. So when Clan Rattray, which was the first people to, you know,
be arrived there. Yeah.
Clan Rattray, very historic family. I've had the privilege of sitting actually down in one of the episodes with one of the Rattrays, Lachlan Rattray. Basically, Rattray was the first settlement. Blairgowrie was nothing but fields. There was not a single house or anything. And it wasn't until somebody saw the economic value of developing that side of the river.
Wow.
That started to become a thing.
And that became Blairgowrie. And now you have a Starbucks that's come full circle.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like a B&M or a Home Bargains.
There's a Home Bargains beside Starbucks. Yeah. It's made it, you know, and that's it.
Yeah, there's a Lidl, there's a Home Bargains, there is Starbucks as well, like you said. Yeah,
it's great. But I think Blairgowrie is quite a nice, self-sufficient place. It's not that far from Perth.
No.
It's not that far from Cooper Angus. It's not that far from Dundee, if you want to argue about it.
Yeah.
But you don't have to leave at all. And it's actually quite a big place. I do a lot of filming up there with Blairgowrie High School.
Oh,
working with DYW, developing my workforce. So I've got and I actually take in work experience pupils from there into here as
well.
That
is really good.
So, you know, they learn photography, a bit of web work and stuff like that as well, design if they want to go down the design route. And it's big. It's a big place and it's got a thriving population now as well. And let's face it, Blairgowrie used to be the brunt of a lot of jokes, you know, stab capital of the world and all that sort of stuff. And it's not. And I think it's a lot better than it has ever been, I would say now. And a really interesting place to dive into, if, you know, being not a mainstream place like Edinburgh, like Glasgow, like, you know, Isle of Skye or whatever your sort of cliche, you know, Ealing-Donan. I mean, geez, everyone knows what that looks like, but not a lot of people know what Blairgowrie looks like if you don't live near Blairgowrie.
Yeah.
Because why would you go there? There's no real reason to go there until people start pointing out things like the old mills and the history behind it.
Do you know, exactly like you said, you know, it's very, a lot of history goes unnoticed in Scotland. We hear about the mainstream things, but there is so many stories that are waiting to be told.
Yeah. And there's lots of small villages around Perthshire that are all full of interesting relics, old churches and stuff that have all got their own wee history. And there's people out there that will be more than willing, I bet, to share their last 80 years on this earth in this village, you know, or whatever it is. And is that where you're heading with your YouTube? Is that what the aim is trying to get around these places?
Yeah, yeah. So at the moment, everything is everything's on Kyle's Life YouTube channel. That's simply just because that's the YouTube channel I've had since I was traveling. So I will eventually, I did start to create something in the background to start putting these more these sort of travel documentaries on, like another brand, if you like. So it's something that I'm working on at the moment, but I'm not quite ready to share.
Oh, fair enough. We shall keep an eye on that one. But
yes,
for the people at home then, obviously we've talked about this YouTube channel, that so to find it, Kyle's Life, is that what we're looking for on YouTube?
Yep.
And there's already stuff up there, as I've already watched a lot of it. There's some Pride stuff up there, there's some Blairgowrie stuff up there. It's ready to rock. Kyle's Life on YouTube. On the YouTube.
So, I guess the final question for me then is the big, not the big one, but the most recent thing is, is this what led to you attending some fairly massive event recently? Mm-hmm. Or how did that all come about? Tell us everything about that.
He wasn't at my birthday.
No, he wasn't.
No.
Because it was a fire risk with all the candles.
Oh, true that. Aye. Shut up.
So That was actually a collective effort. So, you know, with the YouTube stuff, I did obviously create the travel things. And then lockdown hit. So I was working at Tesco's at the time. And at the time that the first lockdown arrived, you know, everyone was just like, what do we do? And I kind of thought to myself, well, there's going to be disabled, differently abled, seniors, a whole community of people that are just unable to leave their homes because of lockdown, because, you know, people aren't able to visit, you know. So I thought to myself, how am I going to be able to support these people to get food, water, these kind of things? So I Over the last few years with doing the series on YouTube and trying to create my own brand, I tried to take the experience and knowledge I had of branding and identity design and filming and all that kind of stuff, and tried to create a whole new brand to sort of help me share this message with the community and help the community to identify this as something that they can support and get on board with, to help these seniors and differently abled people in town to get the food that they need. So we came up with Kale Blair. So we created the branding, the logo.
Oh, that's right in front of you, isn't it? Right there.
Yeah.
Kale Blair, yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. So we created the logo and everything like that. And we created the website. Then I was working at Tesco's at the time. So I thought to myself, right, food, water, all these kind of things. So I spoke with the manager there. I actually pitched this, you know, as if I was about to work with them or something like that.
Dragon's Den.
I wanted to do it quite professionally because, this was going to mean something to people. So I thought, right, let's just do this. So I went in, spoke to them, told them what I was wanting to do with it. They were really supportive and gave me a room in the supermarket, Tesco's in Blairgowrie, to package all of these care packages up to deliver to locals in the town. And it was through that I was able to get interest of shop workers and other locals to become volunteers to help deliver these, and it soon became a community effort. And through that, we were able to raise funds through the community to purchase the groceries. And then any funds that were left over, we were able to donate to a butcher's in the town that actually make fresh homemade ready meals, that we could deliver more care packages. And then we were also able to donate some of the remaining funds to buying PPE for some of the groups in the town as well.
Wow.
So it became like from an idea to a collective effort where there were loads of people helping.
Brilliant.
To make this a reality and to make sure that nobody in Blairgowrie actually during the lockdown were going to struggle.
Yeah.
But also as well, there were other community groups in the town that were really doing great work too.
Nice.
They were helping. So obviously I couldn't do everything myself. So, you know, everybody did something. And I thought that was really important. And it was in a time like that that you see everybody come together to work for a common goal.
Absolutely.
For a shared purpose.
True colours at that point, right?
Yeah.
You know, absolutely.
And I thought that was just amazing. And it's just through doing all of those things, you know, with the travelling, fundraising while I was travelling, and then coming home and helping people to share their stories through the travel documentaries, that it was like a natural progression that when this lockdown came, I was already in a place of thinking, how can I help? You know,
yeah. Almost like a duty at that point,
yeah,
isn't it?
So, yeah,
yeah. Which is awesome because a lot of people were busy going, who can help me?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Whether they needed it or not.
What about me? What about me?
Yeah. Yeah.
So to be fair, though, I painted my fence, so that's good.
So it was literally just through doing that, you know, I was awarded the British Empire Medal. And then it was by being awarded that medal that I was invited to the coronation this year, the King's coronation in May. And that in itself was totally unexpected. When that email came through, I was like, this can't be
scam Nigerian prince wants me to come out.
And it was very humbling as well, because you know there's so many people in Scotland, even in Blairgowrie, that did so many good things and still do so many good things. Mm-hmm. And it really is a humbling experience to have this sort of
to be recognized for what you've done. Mm-hmm.
I do not take that for granted one bit, because you know it very much is a collective effort.
Was it a free bar?
no
asking for a friend.
Definitely not.
Good experience
though, it was really great.
Once a lifetime, of course, should be
just
anyway,
opposite Ant and Dec, you know, visible in the footage.
Yeah,
really.
Got a brief conversation with Ant and Dec, very, very brief. Same with Hamza Yousaf. I managed to say hello to him.
Wow.
I did want to say hi to Lionel Richie, but he was too busy. I could never
approach. Say hello.
Yeah.
Is it me you're
looking for?
You missed out there. Without Lionel, I'm not sure. Just cut this episode. Just delete the whole thing. That was what I was getting to.
Do you know, it's really weird seeing the people that you've only ever seen on a TV screen right there in front of you.
Yeah. It's a strange experience, isn't it? Because they're almost fictional, aren't they, at that point? Yeah.
You're so used to them doing all the talking that you actually don't know what to say. Yeah. You know?
Host me. Tell me things. Oh, wait, that's... Okay. It's like going up to comedians saying, say something funny. Yeah. Doesn't happen. No. So. I mean, it's a hell of a journey you've come on in your time, you know, and it's as I say, I hope it's inspiring. I hope genuinely somebody out there is listening to this and going, Australia, eh? Backpack, eh? And thinking that's actually a great idea. And I think we are. I think Scotland especially up here, I think people are very stuck here in a way. Like they feel stuck here. They don't want to move away. They don't want to. I'm one of them. I've lived here for 21 years, like my age.
My
21 years. I've lived here 44 years. I've never moved away. I've never gone further than Lunkerty to live.
I've always joked about the sort of the magnetic pull of Perth, but I think it's part of it is it's actually not. You know, it's quite a great place.
Yeah.
You know, it's maybe not got everything everybody wants, but it's certainly...
But we're close enough to everything that everybody wants without missing, living in the hustle bustle of what everyone wants.
And it's
and
missing a lot
important.
Of the things that nobody wants as well. You know what I mean?
So, but Perth is a good place to live. I still like it here.
That's
why we do this. And it's good to see you back, obviously, as well. You know, you're back in the area. You're doing something. You're still doing something good for the area. And even if that was just looking after your grandparents, which you're doing way more than that, but even if it was just that, you're doing good things for people. So
do you know, it's funny you say that, because I came across a quote the other day that said slowing down and looking after others, sometimes you've got to do that. You know, you've got to do these things, you've got to slow down sometimes and look after others. It's not always about what we want to do, you know, because other people need our help. And I think it's Carers Week coming up as well. So
yes.
I did see some statistics about that. And it said on there that combined men and women, 65% of us are likely to be carers at some point in our life.
Right.
Yeah.
Whether we want to be or not. It's
exactly.
Coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Because with this experience with me and my grandparents, it was something that I never saw coming. You know, most carers will tell you that they never see these things coming. It's very, very gradual.
Yeah. And there's no training, of course. You're not trained to do it. You're lumped with it. And not in a derogatory way. I just mean that you're one minute you're not a carer and the next minute. And like you say, you didn't even notice it, did you? It suddenly just became a moment that you stopped and went, wait, am I a carer now? Is that what this is?
That's exactly how it happens.
Yeah.
There is a time and a place where you do stop and you ask yourself that question. Yeah.
And it's probably a time thing, right, where you get to a point where you realise you've spent most of the day with that person that you thought you were just helping out, but actually you've now become a carer.
Yeah.
But of course, at that point, that's when you start to realise that there is monetary help out there, you know, that there's things you can do to make that reality, not just that you're helping them out and you don't have time to work anymore. And if it's as high as 60-odd%, I mean, that's quite a number, really, which means more than half of us are heading that way. And actually, I'm a big believer in the sort of karma of that, though. You know, I've got a friend in Glasgow who looks after a guy who used to go to the gym with.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't best mates, they weren't family.
Yeah.
And the guy had a stroke and he can barely look after himself now. And my friend is there every week helping him out. If he ends up in hospital, and he ends up in hospital a lot, he's there to pick him up, take him the stuff that he needs. And, you know, I said to him, you know, that's a great thing that you're doing. It's a very admirable thing. Whatever, it needs done. And I was like, yeah, but somebody will be there for you. I'd like to think somebody will be there for you when that's you, you know, because we're all, you know, heading somewhere. We won't be all youthful like me forever. We won't all be youthful like Kyle forever. But as I say, I genuinely think you're an inspiration to people. Whether you realise it or not, whether you want to be or not, I do think it's an inspirational story. I love the fact you're looking after your grandparents now, and there's not a whinge. Has there been a whinge?
No,
there hasn't been a whinge
about
it.
You just get on with it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that when you do care for somebody, you really get to know them on another level. There's a, I actually watched a film the other day. It was called A Good Person.
The Zach Braff one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all about mental health. And at the end, Morgan Freeman's got a quote on his arm. It says, Amor Fati. And it says, to love one's fate. Sometimes we don't ask for the things that we're given in life, but when we look back on them, we notice the silver lining. We notice that we needed to go through these things because it's all character growth. It's all experience. And when you can have any sort of experience, you've got a shared connection with other people. So with me being a carer, which was never meant to be, I've now got the same experience as any other carer has in Scotland. And that's that connection in itself, the connection of people, the sharing, the caring, it all helps to create a better world. And that's one of the things why I like to do what I'm doing, helping people share their stories, being a carer. It's all to try and help this world become a more kinder, more caring, and more sharing. Because I think that's a worthy goal to pursue. And yeah, I think looking back, you know, if, when we get to 80 and we get to those kind of ages and we look back, we want to be able to ask ourselves, what have we done?
Yes.
You know, how have I been of service to others? Yeah. One of the questions that I'm pondering right now that we might be able to end with is, how can we help businesses and employers to become more engaged in their local communities, and to help make what they do more meaningful?
Yes.
Because when I look back at when I left to go traveling, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where I was going. But looking back, I'm asking myself, I wondered if I left because I was wanting to work. I was wanting my work to be meaningful. Yes. And to mean something. I wanted to contribute to something bigger than these four walls. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm kind of in a position right now where I'm kind of circling back and thinking about these kind of things. How can we help workers, carers, anybody in the local community to continue, especially I'm meaning like businesses and employers here, how can we help them to engage more in their communities and to make what they do more meaningful? Mm-hmm. To help workers find and have more meaning in their lives. Some people love their job, that's fine, but there are people out there that are really searching for something.
Purpose.
Purpose, yeah.
It's all about purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how can we, even it's just good in general to have businesses, whether that be Lidl, whether that be a local family business, to be and play an active part in the local community and to help local communities thrive. Because at the moment, what we're seeing in places like Blairgowrie and Rattray is high streets are suffering. And yeah. We need businesses to be more proactive and engaging in the local community. So yeah, that's a question I'm wondering at the moment.
How do we do it? That's a big question. That's definitely for another podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, come back in a couple of years and tell us how you did it. Yeah.
Yeah. KyleChangesTheWorld.com. That's the next thing.
I think that's the thing though, is it's you can't change the world, but change as much of it as you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the little things. It's the little changes change the big things eventually. And that's what we as people, as normal, everyday people can achieve.
Yeah.
On that, go back to that Morgan Freeman quote. I want to end on that.
The Morgan Freeman quote is Amor Fati, to love one's fate.
To love one's
fate. And
there's
also one that I have with Scott's Vote. Uh-huh. And it's the world doesn't change, we do.
And on that note, folks, that is the end of episode 40.
Can't top that.
No. Like, share, subscribe, the rest of it.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Play the music. It's over.
Thanks, Kyle.